Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the October 6th, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. As we settle in for another hour of discussion about our nation's space program, we might call it halftime right now between Thursday's Delta IV launch and tomorrow's Falcon 9 launch attempt, or, well, maybe we should use a baseball analogy and call it the middle of a doubleheader. In any case, with two back-to-back launches, the potential that fall might actually be around the corner here in Florida, and the fact that my Minnesota Vikings are doing so well, they're all great reasons to be in a good mood today. But the best reason is that, well, Jules Schneider from Lockheed Martin is in the studio with me today, last-minute guest who agreed to fill in when our previously scheduled guest, NASA's Leland Melvin, had to reschedule. We'll get to him later in the year. With Jules here, that means we're going to be talking once again about the Orion spacecraft and the work being done right now on that vehicle here at the Kennedy Space Center. We'll also spend a little time talking about the aforementioned Falcon 9 launch set for Sunday evening. Plus, as always, we'll take your questions or comments about the space program. If you've got something space-related on your mind, please feel free to give us a call at 321-768-1240 or contact us online by sending an email right now to spacetalking@aol.com. All right, with those introductions out of the way, let's get to this week's installment of my more or less weekly broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. Well, with the election now exactly 1 month away, it seems we are stuck with the plans for our space program that both candidates for president have promised they will pursue if elected. Now, based on their campaign rhetoric and official position papers now released, both candidates say they support our space program for all the good reasons we all know are why this nation needs to be in space. The pursuit of knowledge, developing technology, ensuring national security, stimulating the economy, inspiring students to pursue education, and, well, because exploration is part of the human spirit and part of our national character. Now, each of these have been held up in one form or another by the candidates, and I'm glad that they have at least a passing notion as to why a robust space program is something they must pursue as president during the next 4 years. So while I'm happy about what they're saying as to why we need a space program, I'm at the same time, well, quite grumpy about how each presidential candidate says they will go about actually doing it. Let's review. President Obama's plan is to stay the course we are on now. Now, that involves continuing to operate the International Space Station until at least 2020, relying on the Russians to carry our astronauts into space until private industry here can do the job, and developing the Orion spacecraft and Space Launch System booster to enable human exploration of an asteroid by 2025 and maybe a journey to Mars during the 2030s. Now, my problem with President Obama's plan is that although it is specific in what we're doing right now, it is too vague for my tastes in what we'll be doing in the near future when he has left the office after a second term, well, should he win. Now, enabling this capability to send humans as far as Mars is great, but I have yet to hear anyone from this administration clearly articulate our plans for exactly what we're going to do when we get there, let alone when the additional money is coming to develop the specific mission hardware we'll need beyond what's already planned for Orion and the SLS. In any case, Try as I might with these plans, I'm still having a tough time getting that sort of same sense of excitement about our future in space that I did when I was a kid growing up during Apollo, or even as a young adult when the space shuttle started flying. That said, at least with President Obama, we have a picture of what the future of NASA might look like, a sort of better-than-nothing mindset. Now, speaking of nothing, Governor Romney's plan, if elected, is to gather together a bunch of experts to study what we should be doing in space and determine the best way to make it happen. Now, that's the last thing we need. As we have said time and again, our bookshelves are filled with the same kind of studies. We have known long since before the space age began. 55 years ago this past Thursday with the launch of Sputnik 1, I might add, what steps we would take in expanding human civilization toward the stars. First Earth orbit, then the moon, then on to Mars, the moons of Jupiter, and so on, until the next thing you know, we really do have a united federation of planets someday in the far future. Of course, even if we agree on the destination, the best way to get there is always worth discussing. My wife and I may agree that we want to visit the grandparents in Tallahassee, but she may want to take the Buick and go up I-95 and then over, while I might prefer the Ford and head up using the Turnpike and I-75. So it may not be completely stupid for President Romney to want to have that kind of discussion about our space program. Mars may be the destination, and we certainly need a heavy lift booster and a new human-rated spacecraft to get us there. But does Orion have what it takes? Is the Space Launch System the right design for a heavy lift rocket? Should more of the job of exploration be given to private industry? Well, we don't know the answers to all of that yet. But a good manager, as our president must be, whoever it turns out to be, should always be evaluating his options and plans moving forward. But the danger in doing that with our space program, and the thing that worries me most about what Governor Romney is saying, is that in taking time to reevaluate our space policy, we will once again cancel programs already well along in their development, waste billions of dollars in starting over, risk giving up our place as the world's leader in space, and unmercifully delay the dreams of so many of us who want to explore, work, and live on the final frontier. So, with 1 month to go before Election Day, if you're going to make your decision based on the single issue of space, well, at least me, this registered Republican, has no endorsement to offer. My advice is, well, that you're going to have to make up your mind based on your own views of all the other issues facing our nation and the way you think our nation should be best be governed. Now, of course, it's on that basis that I'll make my vote like you. But no matter who wins, I hope that you, like me, will be willing to continue to do everything we can to ensure our space program remains second to none and that we stay on course for going back to the moon, Mars, and beyond, whether we take the Ford or the Buick. And that's this week's Orbital Inclinations. Well, coming up here in just a moment, we will be taking our first break of the day and get you caught up a little bit on what's going on. By the way, Air Force beating Navy in the third quarter. But we will pause for a couple of minutes. When we return, we're going to spend some time talking with Jules Schneider from Lockheed Martin about the Orion spacecraft and how work to prepare that vehicle for its first launch is proceeding at the Kennedy Space Center. Jules has been on the program before in March. A lot has gone on since then. So we want to get a good update on how that spacecraft is coming along. There's a lot more to talk about with the Orion spacecraft, a great little vehicle if you ask me. A little bit later on, we're going to preview Sunday's planned launch of SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket on a mission to deliver cargo to the International Space Station. Of course, it's another big shot for the commercial space firm SpaceX and a big deal for all of us on the Space Coast is NASA continues in its effort to turn more and more of its space transportation needs over to the private sector. All that and your input, too. Give us a call, 321-768-1240. Email spacetalking@AOL.com. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com.
If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Indeed. Welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240 is the number to call if you'd like to participate in the program, or you can always send us your questions or comments in an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, a couple of weeks ago, the space community here celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy Space Center with a big gala that had the theme Celebrating the Past and Preparing for the Future. It was a perfect theme, I thought, coming at a time when so many people around the nation think that when the end of the space shuttle program came, our entire space program is dead and the Kennedy Space Center is now a ghost town. Well, yes, we have a lot to celebrate about our storied past here at America's best spaceport, but we are by no means finished with space exploration. Using rockets and spacecraft launched from KSC, as we've noted earlier, NASA and its contractor workforce actively working to prepare the new Space Launch System rocket and the Orion spacecraft that will carry our astronauts back to the moon and on to Mars and, of course, all the other places. Now, all that work is more than just producing PowerPoint presentations or artist concepts of what it will all look like. Actual Orion flight hardware already exists here at KSC, and the first flight tests are barely more than just a couple of years away. Now, here to update us on what's going on, what's still ahead, is a veteran guest of Space Talk from just last March. And as it turns out, a good friend willing to help a guy out when it looked like he might not have a guest this weekend and we'd have to spend the whole hour listening just to me. Not something you want to do. Jules Schneider is Lockheed Martin's manager in charge of the work being done on Orion here at KSC. And Jules, welcome back to the program. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me back on Space Talk.
Well, good. Hey, so we've been chatting through the weeks and months since March. A lot has been going on. We'll get to all those updates in a second. But for those who are new to the program, new to the area, new to whatever, tell us about what exactly is Orion.
Well, Orion is, as you mentioned earlier, the NASA's human-rated spacecraft, their next human-rated spacecraft, designed for exploration missions.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, NASA's decision a while ago was to take the resupply of crew and cargo to the space station and move that to the commercial sector.
Right.
And that freed them up to focus on exploration. And they decided to keep Orion going, coming out of the Constellation program, as the people carrier for mm-hmm. those exploration missions.
And you know, a few weeks ago we had Ed Mango on from KSC, and you know, he's commercial crew program, which is, of course, again, private industry bringing humans to space, to the space station. Again, Orion, completely different. This is more of the what we're used to from NASA in terms of a NASA spacecraft, NASA astronauts, a NASA-run mission using contractors to do the work.
Correct. As I said, NASA decided they wanted to go ahead and not focus on the ISS resupply,
sure.
But they wanted to go ahead and focus on the up and out, if you will. And that's what Orion's all about.
And what's different here about Orion, well, is that spacecraft being processed, assembled, manufactured practically here at KSC. And the big news since we talked to you in March, of course, was what, in July, wasn't it, early July?
Yes.
That Orion's, the first spacecraft itself, came here to KSC. Talk about that piece of hardware. What's it all about?
Yeah, sure. So as you mentioned, typically NASA will put out an RFP and select a contractor to design and develop a spacecraft. But again, typically that's done at a contractor facility somewhere around the country. And then once that spacecraft is designed and built, it comes here to get processed. But what we decided to do when we were awarded Orion was to move our factory here to the ONC building at KSC. So what we're actually doing here on Orion is we're actually building the spacecraft and testing it. Typically, that would be done at a contractor facility somewhere else.
Sure. Well, and again, historically, this was such a huge thing for KSC, a real change in the cultural mindset. And it's worth talking about again and again because it showcases what we can do here at KSC in terms of the facilities and the people that we've never really taken advantage of before. We, you know, you go back in history, as you know, Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, even shuttle to extend. And a lot of times, even our satellites that we launch, as you said, they get built somewhere else. So let's say you build an Apollo capsule at Downey in Rockwell in California back in the good old days. And it gets built. It's assembled. It's practically ready to fly. It's all tested. It's all checked out. You ship it across the country. You get here, and then you spend months testing it out again, checking it out again, redoing all the work, re-verifying all the connections, driving up costs, taking time. And a lot of people said, well, why don't we just do the work here? And culturally, it never happened until Orion.
Right. And not to mention, when you do it the way you described, a whole bunch of the workforce that actually built it at some contractor facility ends up coming here anyway.
That's right. And it's great for the hotels and the local rental places, but
right.
why not base them here?
Exactly. Why not move the factory here where you're going to build it, test it, process it, integrate it to a launch vehicle, and then launch it?
So when we talk about the first Orion being delivered here, first of all, let's talk about it's the first one. How reusable is this? Is there any piece of it that's reusable? Talk about that part.
Sure,
of it.
Sure. So let me tell you, the first one you talk about that arrived here is for the first orbital test flight. It's called the Exploration Flight Test 1, or
right.
EFT-1. We've built a dedicated ground test article that you may have seen or heard about called GTA, or ground test article.
Okay.
But this is definitely the first orbital flight test. We also had a pad abort test a couple of years ago. But this is, the first orbital flight test. The parts of it have actually been showing up for quite some time, for months. But the part you talked about that showed up in July was the primary structure for the pressure vessel for the crew module.
And that's hard to explain unless you see pictures of it, because I think a lot of folks know Orion is essentially it looks like an old Apollo capsule. It's cone shaped, you know, and the laws of physics haven't changed since the 1960s. So when you want to send a spacecraft into deep space and return it to Earth, that's kind of the shape that works best. So a little bigger than Apollo. But and a lot more room for more people and more stuff inside.
A little more sophisticated.
That's for sure. More material. And we should talk about that in a moment. But what I'm trying to get at, Jules, is that what was delivered to KSC didn't look like an Apollo command module.
No, it's basically the inner structure or the skeleton of the shell that holds the pressure where the crew will be.
Kind of like a cylinder with a little roof on it.
It's kind of got a conical shape on the front, then a cylinder on the aft end, and a bulkhead on the back.
It's missing its walls, basically.
The external walls, certainly,
yeah.
The OML, as we call it, right?
Oh, really? OML? What's that one?
Outside mold line.
Now, that's an acronym I hadn't heard yet. Yes. That's a good one, OML. Okay, well, we learned something today. Now your job, then, is to take that pressure shell and do what with it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So for the next few months, we'll be finishing the structural assembly of both the crew module, which showed up here in, as you said, early July, and we're actually completely assembling the service module, which is the aft end of the Orion system.
Okay.
Basically from piece parts that show up here from all over the country. So, and those are some of the parts that have been showing up for a while. So there is a whole bunch of mechanical assembly, if you will, that's going on right now in the ONC building on both the crew module and the service module for Orion. So we have to finish the structure build. Then we have to do some structural testing here, again, in the ONC building, mm-hmm. on both the crew module and the service module. And then once we finish that, which will be end of the year, this year, maybe January,
okay.
then we'll actually start outfitting those primary structures with all of the different subsystems that go into making the vehicle, a spacecraft.
At some point, then, do you have the Orion capsule and the service module attached together and ready to fly?
Yep,
as well?
That actually happens in the ONC building. So one of the last things we do before we deliver the what we call the short stack, which is the crew module and service module mated together, is mate them together. So we build the crew module up as a complete assembly and do a lot of testing at that level. We build the service module up as an assembly, test it, and then we bring the two together and do that mate of the crew module and service module and do a lot of testing across that interface. And then we're about ready to leave the ONC building and go start prepping it. And that's kind of where you would say classically what would happen here at the Cape would pick up.
Okay. So you know, I hadn't considered all the talk of Orion and the crew module. I hadn't considered the service module. Lockheed Martin has that job too. Is that all one big deal?
Yeah, and the Orion system has three major elements. It's the crew module, which the one gets most of the press, right? Because that's where all the that's where the astronauts are.
Right.
The service module is the module that sits behind it. You remember on Apollo 13, the service module,
sure.
The one that had the problem?
Sure, yeah.
Exactly. So Orion has a very similar major element part of its system, and a lot of propulsion. Its main propulsion system, obviously, its big engine is back there, and
sure.
A lot of the thermal control systems are on the service module. And then on the third element of Orion is the launch abort system,
which is
the obviously the solid rocket motor system that sits on top of the crew module. That affords us the level of safety that we need should we have a problem either on the pad or during ascent.
Okay, well, that's all good stuff. Now, Jules, we're coming up here on our little break here at the bottom of the hour. Actually, we're going to pause. Stand by, Jules. We're going to pause for the traditional five-minute built-in hold here. Get you caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. All what's going on here on College Football Saturday. And then we'll be back with more talk about the Orion spacecraft with an idea of what's happening next in this first EFT flight that Jules mentioned coming up here in a couple of years. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. Call Jim now, 768-1240.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. Again, the phone lines and online inbox open for your questions or comments. Phone number 321-768-1240. The email address spacetalking@AOL.com. If you're wondering about the Orion crew module, the service module, how it's all going to come together, what's going to happen to it? That's what we're talking about today with Jules Schneider from Lockheed Martin, the man in charge of all of Lockheed Martin's work here out at KSC. Tremendous vehicle. You know, I talked earlier in Orbital Inclinations, you know, about you know, how excited I am about space and the future. You know, and there is a lot to be excited about. You know, I mean, I as I said, I kind of want a more refined vision. I want a mission patch. I want a name for a program. I want a T-shirt, and I don't have that yet. And we'll get there. But just talking with Jules about Orion today and through the weeks that we've known each other, it's an incredible vehicle with so much taken advantage of. And Jules, kind of the first question, you know, let's talk some more about how far we've progressed in spacecraft design since the days of Apollo. We were talking about the service module, the device, the part of the spacecraft beneath the crew module that holds all the systems and the propulsion and the power and all of that, and how you're going to do things differently with this vehicle, just even in terms of, like you said, the load-bearing walls of the service module breaking apart. Talk a little bit about that.
If you look at a model of Orion, you'll notice that at the service module, kind of the outer structure is kind of inboard of the outer shell of the service module, and that's because it's encapsulated by a set of fairings. The reason we did that was because we didn't want the service module structure, which has to travel to, you know, faraway destinations
sure.
and come back, to have to bear the cost weight-wise of being able to take the loads during ascent, which size some of that structure. So why would you size some of the structure that you have to take to the moon or Mars just based on the ascent loads? You want to get rid of that as fast as you can once you get through ascent, right? So as soon as you get Orion into orbit, you want to get rid of that weight. So that's why we encapsulated the service module, so we could not have to bear the cost of that weight all the way to a destination and back.
Yeah, it looks so cool when you look at the artist concepts of this. You know, in Apollo, if people remember from Apollo 13 or just being aware of it, you know, you had the command module. And then as you follow that conical line, that outer mold line, the OML, it was flush with the service module, very clean, straight down to the propulsion, the main propulsion engine in the back. And what we're talking about here is that once Orion is in orbit and doing its thing, you go from that conical crew module shape to something that's a little skinnier, a little less diameter than the base of the heat shield of the crew module. And it's those walls around that you're getting rid of which are heavy and have to deal with a lot of the stress. The other big thing, and I think that's great, I think that's so smart about an example of what we've learned since the early days of spaceflight. The other thing that's different about this vehicle, if you look at it compared to, again, we compare it to the Apollo Command Service Module because it's so similar in shape and to many extents its mission, is that there are solar arrays on the service module sticking out from either side, kind of like the Russian Soyuz where you see these solar panels sticking out. Talk a little bit about that development and why we need that and just kind of basically how cool is it?
Well, I mean, you can imagine destinations like an asteroid or, Mars, they're going to require Orion to be away from Earth for a long period of time.
Yeah.
I believe one of our requirements, certainly I know under Constellation, I think we still have it, was to be able to orbit the moon in a quiescent stage for up to like a month.
Wow.
While people were down on the surface. So
sure.
In order to be able to, we can't simply carry enough power or energy stored in batteries for that length of time. So we have to be able to generate power, much like the space station does, right? I mean, the space station has huge solar arrays. So Orion will have those so it can recharge its batteries, if you will, so that it'll have enough power to be able to complete its mission.
A lot easier to do those solar arrays than to, like you say, carry batteries or even fuel cells where you combine hydrogen and oxygen, but then you've got plumbing and
exactly.
Weight,
yeah.
And I guess we call it reactants in this case.
Right.
You know, and the solar arrays themselves are also interesting, and it gives the whole spacecraft a very unique look to it. I'm going to have to take the coolest artist concept I can find and post it on the Space Talk page at WMMBAM.com because it's so cool looking, these two circular solar arrays that essentially kind of unfold like an umbrella, but not really.
Almost like a Japanese fan, if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, those arrays, there's an example of Lockheed Martin bringing its experience to bear. Lockheed Martin has a huge solar array facility out in Sunnyvale, California, where they do a lot of development. And we actually developed and actually used those solar arrays on some of our planetary missions.
Right.
And so that's how we came about using those circular solar arrays. I believe they're more efficient both in their performance, from a weight standpoint and an electrical standpoint than the ones that we'd been using in the past that were more, I'll say, rectangular
right.
in shape.
Right, and they remind me a lot, and I know it's a different purpose, but, you know, Harris here locally did the high-gain antenna, for example, for Galileo that unfolded. Well, unfortunately, it got hung up on something, which is a whole other story. But this concept of these unfolding arrays and antennas that are used on spacecraft all over the place, very neat stuff. Let's talk, Jules. Let's move on to talking about EFT-1 because you've got the first Orion here. I assume you're going to be getting more at some point. I don't know if you're going to have a whole assembly line at some point, and that would be an interesting question. But let's talk about EFT-1. This is all building toward what you're doing now, toward an exploration flight test? Is that what we're calling
That's
it?
That's correct, exploration flight test.
In when? And talk the mission profile. What's going to happen?
Sure. So we're going to be building EFT-1 in the ONC building. We'll probably finish all of the work on it and be ready to deliver it for ground processing third to fourth quarter next year.
Okay.
It'll be done completely and tested, which is not long, not far away.
Yeah, really.
Just,
when you think
about
it,
1 year away.
Yeah.
We'll actually deliver the vehicle to the ground processing team, which for EFT-1 is still Lockheed Martin, and they will spend a couple of months, maybe 4 months, processing it on the ground. Getting it ready with its fuels and its mission specific hardware, and then it'll roll over to Launch Complex 37, where it will get mated to a Delta IV Heavy. And it'll be launched in 2014. We don't have an exact date from ULA on that.
Right.
We are on their manifest, though. If you go out to the Delta IV Heavy launch manifest and you look into 2014, I believe
You'll
if you look
there.
In September, you will see the Orion launch.
So when Orion is ready to fly, and you said it being turned over the ground processing, I'm just trying to think again of my experience with payloads out there and whatnot. I mean, the thing gets prepared in the ONC building, and does it essentially leave that building ready to launch and goes to the pad? I mean, you just have different teams working it internally, or is there a whole other facility that it goes to before it goes out to the pad?
Right. It goes to actually a couple of facilities. It'll go – EFT-1's a little unique. It will go actually to Astrotech in Titusville to get serviced. The ONC building is a manufacturing facility, like we talked earlier.
Right.
It's not rated to handle the hazardous propellants and
stuff,
that Orion will need. So that's that typical ground processing that typically happens at the Cape. So it'll leave us. It'll go the short stack, as I mentioned, without the LAS, will go to Astrotech. It'll get processed there, get fueled, and like I said, some of the mission-specific hardware there.
Okay.
Then it will roll to the that EFT-1 will roll to like I said, LC-37, and then it'll get integrated onto a Delta IV.
Well, that's going to be a great day when we see that thing roll across the causeway.
I've had that conversation with a few people, and that will be a sight. I hope, you know, I really hope that that'll get the Space Coast excited when you see Orion traveling from Titusville and Astrotech and Titusville over to LC-37. That'll be a heck of a roll.
That sure will be. It'll be all set,
and that's
ready
not
to fly.
Far away. That's just over a year away.
No, now you know, I don't know how to ask this. I mean, a lot of people who are new to the program or don't fully understand space, and that's totally fine. We've got to ask the right questions. Will ask me, they say, why is it taking so long? Why is it taking so long for this spacecraft, this Orion vehicle, when it's delivered here in July of 2012, it's still taking more than 2 years before it's ready to fly? You know, in the past, it seems like things just come here. They're here for a few months, and then they're gone. And everything in the program seems to be taking so long. Why, when we could do Apollo, Saturn V in 7 years, is it taking us 15 years to get SLS off the ground? And I know SLS is in your program, but this whole idea of why things take as long as they do, you've been around the space program, you know what's going on. What's different about those days compared to now? And is it just money, or is there something more to it?
Well, there's a lot of elements to that question, so I'll try and take them one at a time.
Good luck.
So, you know, Orion was awarded to Lockheed Martin back, I think it was 2006, late 2006, but that was part of Constellation, right? And so we were proceeding. We had gotten actually through a PDR on Orion under Constellation.
Preliminary design review.
Right.
Yep.
And then the administrations changed, and the Obama administration had the Augustine Commission put together, and they came out with their recommendation to basically saying Constellation, while technically sound, was not affordable under the current budget scenarios.
Right.
And so that put a huge perturbation, if you will, into the system in the development of Orion. And because at that time, you know, we didn't know if Orion was going to come out or survive or not. And so it took about a year for Orion to come out of that and survive so that we could start again.
Okay, and with that long question, we give him a short answer. We're going to pick up the rest of the answer in just a moment, take our final break, and then we will finish that answer and get you caught up on what's new with the SpaceX launch tomorrow as well. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk. With your reminder, you can stay in touch with us online throughout the week. Your first stop, WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, to find an archive of past Space Talk shows, including the March 11th inaugural Jules Schneider edition of the show, as well as some text versions of Orbital Inclinations. You can also follow us on Twitter at Space Talking. There's a Space Talk page on Facebook. And your questions, comments, always welcome in any way you can. Let us know what you're thinking, what you want to see on the show. Now, as for the launch forecast, we've already talked a little bit about it. SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket set to blast off from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station tomorrow night at 8:35 p.m. on a cargo delivery mission to the International Space Station. The Dragon spacecraft, filled with just shy of about 900 pounds of supplies and equipment, it's a fairly light load for this first of 12 official I guess we call them commercial sorties to the orbiting outpost by SpaceX. All of them being conducted as part of the first of a $1.6 billion contract that the company has with NASA, a whole new way of doing business. The weather forecast as of now predicts a 60% chance of acceptable conditions for what we usually call an instantaneous launch window. In other words, everything has to go right technically and weather-wise for launch precisely at 8:35 p.m. or the rocket won't fly. Now, so far, SpaceX has yet to launch a Falcon rocket on its first attempt, but like my Minnesota Vikings record so far this season, we could be pleasantly surprised, and I certainly hope that that's the case, that we get off the ground on time tomorrow. If it does make it off the ground Sunday from Launch Complex 40, it'll arrive at the space station and be berthed there on Wednesday. We'll stick around for about 18 days as the astronauts load and unload and load and unload and whatnot. After which it'll return to Earth with about 1,600 pounds of cargo, the only robot spaceship that can do that round trip from the space station, splashing down in the Pacific Ocean, this time off of the west coast of Mexico. Now, of course, we'll bring you live coverage of the launch here on WMMB beginning at 8:30 p.m., which will be following the late afternoon Jacksonville Jaguars game against the Bears. Of course, that game will be over with in the first quarter, so I don't think we'll have any worries about going into overtime. In any case, you'll have plenty of time to head outside and get a good vantage point for what will be a nighttime launch. Once again, the next launch tomorrow, Falcon 9 rocket, 8:35 p.m. For more information about this and all the other various launches scheduled around the world, you can go to the web, WMMBAM.com, keyword space talk. Look for the link to our local launch forecast. We're going to wrap up here with just a couple minutes here with Jules Snyder from Lockheed Martin, the man in charge of Orion processing out at the Cape. And we're talking about this first launch year in basically the fall of 2014, the exploration flight test. And as we get to that, we were talking before the break about how come it takes so long to get things done out here, especially when we think about the early days of the program and how fast things seem to turn around. And as you were starting to say, it's more than just money. There's some complexity to it as well. Why don't we finish that answer?
Sure. So I had gotten us up through, we came out of the Constellation era. We survived. We advanced the vehicle's design to the critical design review level. We started having parts built. The supply chains got spun up. As I mentioned earlier, parts started showing up earlier this year, and we're assembling it now. We'll finish assembling it and testing it by late next year. And so all of that, everything that I mentioned leading up to that point, typically happens before things even show up at KSA.
Yeah, yeah.
And so by the time we give it to, as I mentioned, to the ground processing team and it launches, will only be a few months, say between 4, 6, possibly 8 at the longest. So it although it seems like a long time, there's been a lot of things happening both in the political sphere and also the fact that we're building the vehicle here. Appears that it takes longer here at KSC, but it's actually a good thing.
Yeah, and things do take longer. They're more complex, but again, so much happens behind the scenes you don't hear about that there's actually a lot going on. I mean, the Space Launch System booster, for example, I'll just speak on behalf of that, is moving along very well. They're doing a lot of stuff, a lot of things going on, a lot of design happening. We don't see hardware yet, but when it comes, it's going to come rather quickly, and it just takes long. It's the nature of the beast. Let's talk about EFT-1. In September, what are we going to see when this Delta IV lifts off, and what are you going to be watching for in particular as a guy close to Orion?
Right. So the main objectives of EFT-1 is to simulate the environments that the spacecraft will see on an exploration mission. So the environments for a mission that has to travel to a destination beyond low Earth orbit and probably more importantly return from a destination beyond low Earth orbit are different and in some cases more severe than returning from LEO,
from low Earth orbit.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we're going to take Orion up on a Delta IV. We're going to do one orbit in LEO, and then the vehicle's propulsion system will put it into an elliptical orbit.
Okay.
It will be it will travel out 3,600 miles away from Earth,
okay,
which will be, by the way, the farthest that we've ever sent a spacecraft and returned it to Earth since Apollo.
Yeah, really?
Yes.
At least on purpose.
And we will then bring it back, and the environments that it sees when it reenters will be close to what it would see on a reentry from an exploration destination, be it the moon, an asteroid, et cetera. So we'll stress the heat shield, the thermal protection systems, the landing and recovery systems, and obviously during its mission out there, all of the guidance, navigation, control, propulsion. So all of those systems will be tested, if you will, mm-hmm. in the environments that we would see on an exploration mission. That's really the main objective of EFT-1.
A couple of quick questions, Jules, with about a minute left to go here. Will the vehicle be pressurized? Could you have put humans on board if you wanted to?
The crew module's pressure vessel will be pressurized, but it won't have enough of the environmental control and life support systems on board to be able to sustain crew, so you could not. But the reason we didn't put them on was because we knew it wasn't crew.
Okay. Launch escape active?
Not the abort motor. The jettison motor obviously will, because we have to jettison it.
Right.
But the abort motor will not be active on EFT-1.
And real quick, this is just kind of a goofy question coming from me anyway, but when you get 3,600 miles out to simulate coming back at reentry from like a lunar orbit or even deep space, do you need the propulsion system of the service module to basically fire the capsule back into the atmosphere? Or will it have enough speed kind of on its own falling, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the propulsion systems on Orion aren't like, they don't have to have the performance to get out of, you know, Earth's gravitational pull, right?
Right.
So they're not like like the main engines on the shuttle or the
right.
solid rocket boosters. But they obviously provide the delta V you need to make maneuvers, to be able to turn around, come back, and position yourself for reentry.
Okay, that's great. Jules, believe it or not, we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming in, especially on short notice.
No problem.
Good luck. We're going to be in touch because this is the coolest thing happening at the Cape right now.
Thanks for having me.
All right, great. Hey, that is it for now. Space Talk is a production of Mila Solutions, brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the ops station for today's program. Please join us next Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMAB presents a weekend edition of the Glenn Beck program. In the meantime, don't forget, we'll be on the air tomorrow night after the Jaguars football game with live coverage of the Falcon 9 launch from SpaceX. Go SpaceX. I'm Jim Behnke. We'll talk to you again real soon.